Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the gang. You know, the one you never asked to be a part of. You are listening to the Grief Gang podcast with me, your host, Amber Jeffrey. This podcast has been created to tackle the tough but important conversations around grief with authenticity, realness, and having a laugh whilst we're at it. Look, we're all going to experience grief at some point in our life, in some way or another. So it's good to talk about it so that it's not much of a nightmare when it comes knocking at our doors. Grief can be incredibly lonely and isolating, but you don't have to feel lonely alone. On this podcast, you will hear various different stories and experiences, ones that will uplift you, inspire you, break your heart, mend your heart, and get you asking yourself some big questions. Some of these stories are my own, some are from the wonderful growing Grief Gang community, and some are from the incredible guest interviews. You will most likely cry. I hope somewhere along the line you can get a giggle in. But I promise you, you will learn something. I haven't got a clue what you'll take away, but I know you will take away something. So this might be weird to say given the context, but happy listening. Hello, hello, hello. How the devil are you? Welcome back to another episode of the Grief Gang podcast. This week, I am talking to my friend, Katie Dowan. Katie and I met back in, oh my God, it actually feels like a lifetime ago now. Katie and I met back in the February. Yes, that's right. The February of 2020. And how Katie and I met was through the wonderful The New Normal charity. You will have, if you follow me on the Instagram, have heard me talk about them and rave about them all the time. The New Normal charity hosts regular meetups for bereaved people, and there's loads of spin-off groups and stuff like that. So do check them out at TNN charity on Instagram. But this was pre-pandemic, and I met Katie the day that I recorded an interview with the two founders of the charity, Jack and Ben. And on that day, I decided to stay after our recording together and actually attend one of their in-person meetings at the time that they were still holding before we obviously went into lockdown. And I've got into this room, I'm just like, yeah, okay, like I'll stay and I'll hang out and just see what one of your actual meetings are really like. And of course it was amazing, and just so it was my first ever proper real experience like being in an in-person like bereavement group, so it was just like all new to me. And I was sat amongst these people as we were just talking about our grief and just like bringing our grievances, quite literally. And I was sat next to this lovely woman who I was so nervous and like so scared to put my hat out just to speak, really. Just, and I was kind of just taking it all in. And to the left of me was the lovely Katie. And I remember just like gravitating towards her and just smiling in her presence. And as she spoke about her grief, and she was so eloquent and just mesmerizing. And so we stayed in contact, and she follows Grief Gang, and she's just a wonderful, wonderful human being. And as of recently, as I've been planning this season 5 of the podcast, and I'm now full swing in it, I knew that when I wanted to do the season, I knew that this was the season that I wanted to put on my big girl pants and address and cover addiction, and not just like loss by addiction, addiction as a whole. Because, and after you listen to today's episode, you'll understand what I mean just then about not just saying about death by addiction, but just like loss as a whole when it comes to addiction. Because addiction, I feel it's still, I hate the word taboo, and I've used it all the time. Addiction can be such a taboo topic for people, and it will stay taboo unless we start talking about it. And I think I probably definitely played my part in that of, as I said to Katie off mic, of I think what's taken me so long was that I really wanted to do this right by both people who have lost loved ones by addiction or have lived with addiction. So that's why throughout this sort of mini series of the addiction series, you will hear different stories and perspectives through what it is like to live a loss by and with addiction. But for today's episode, I am speaking to Katie, as when I did a call out a good couple of months ago about a specific area of addiction that I would like to cover, Katie so kindly and, as I said, eloquently, wrote me a letter. And I knew as soon as I finished reading it, and my jaw was on the floor, but not in like a, you know, shock at the story, just shock, not even shock, but just really taken aback at how just eloquent, and I knew this, but in detail, Katie told me her story. And I knew straight away that I had to have her on the podcast. I knew that I would never be able to do it justice just reading her letter. And I knew, and I just know that this episode will bring such value to anybody who is living with this experience, and also who hasn't as well. I like to think that even though so many stories that I may share on here may not actually directly resonate with you, but at least that you give it the time to hear these people's stories and try and understand. And I think it just makes us all for better human beings, doesn't it? And so once you hear this today, I hope it kind of, you walk away with some learnings and just also some insight, as I hope every single episode. And so for today's episode, Katie is talking to me about a living loss. We're talking about a living loss today. Katie's mother died when she was 23, but for today's purposes, we are talking about the loss and the living loss that Katie has experienced of her ex-husband. Katie's ex-husband was and is still, as present today, living with addiction, and how living with that addiction and being married to somebody with that addiction, and the grief that is tied to that. I have really come to learn that grief is not just tied to somebody dying in your life. You can absolutely grieve for somebody and something that is still alive, well, and kicking. And what does it look like to grieve when someone is still alive and it's still present and it still roams this earth? What does that grief look like? How do you tend to it? How do you, when you've actually been bereaved as well, bereaved by a death, and then go through this sort of like grief, how do you live with the both in tandem? These are all the questions that I'm asking Katie today. And she so beautifully shares her experience of that with us today. It is, she's so graceful in this episode and just in general. And at the end, I said to her, I said, you've got grace beyond years. And I think there's life lessons in this episode that can apply to everybody, even regardless of is this being your experience or not? So I've rambled on a little bit too much for this introduction. I really hope you enjoyed this episode and that you stick it out and listen all the way through, because it is just amazing and Katie is amazing. And for anybody who is struggling and potentially living in this situation, living this scenario, you're not alone, and please do reach out, as help is there for you. Oh, well, Katie, thank you so much for joining me here today on the Grief Gang podcast. It's so, so lovely to have you here and to see your face after so, so many years.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're a superstar. Honestly, there's no one else that, when I received so many submissions like for this episode and just people sharing their stories of when I read yours, I had no doubt the response was going to be after, please come on the podcast.
Well, I'm honoured to be a part of it, so thank you.
Oh, thank you. So Katie, could you spend a bit of time telling the listeners a bit about you and your story and how you relate to today's topic?
Sure, yeah. So I lost my mom when I was 23 in 2012. So that's kind of my first major experience with loss. Mm. And in terms of the topic we're discussing today, I had already met my husband, now ex-husband, unfortunately, and he is an addict. And so it's a living loss, really, because unfortunately our marriage has ended as a result of his addiction. Yeah. After 2.5 years of marriage.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, Katie. And do you mind taking us back to kind of where it all began and kind of the roller coaster that you've been on and what it has been like to live with a living loss? Because the reason why, like I said in the introduction of this, that wanting to speak about a living loss and why, although my podcast is predominantly about grief and the grief of a death of a person, when it came to this new season, I really wanted to explore living losses, because I feel like the word grief is not just tied to the death of a loved one and a person that, you know, that we care for and love for. Absolutely. It's grief. Yeah. And I think the pandemic has really shone a light on that for me. And as my podcast has grown and the community has grown, that I'm now coming into contact with more people who are resonating with Grief Gang. It's just the word grief, but they're like, I haven't had anybody die. So they just don't know where to place themselves. And they feel like they're disemplaced. They're like, I resonate with the words of the people who have had people die in their lives, but I don't feel like it's maybe okay to put myself into the grieving community. And I'm like, no, but you totally are. You're grieving, and to accept that, I guess, is the step forward to healing yourself. But yeah, would you mind taking us back to sort of the beginning, if that's okay with you?
Well, we lived on the same road. So I was 18, working in the local pub, and he came in and recognised me. We lived four doors away from each other, and I hadn't seen him or noticed him before. And he said, oh, I think you live down my road. And we kind of hit it off from there. There was a 6-year age difference between us. He was a little bit older. And for me, it was that first huge love, you know, the rainbows and the butterflies. I was absolutely head over heels in love with him. And I knew he was an addict, and I knew that he was living a clean life. And at that point, we ended up being together for 7.5 years, and it was quite a volatile relationship. Neither of us knew how to communicate effectively with each other. So a lot of shouting. We'd break up, we'd get back together, break up, get back together again. And after 7.5 years, we called it quits. And that was after the death of my mum. I realised that life was too short and both of us were unhappy, and we went our separate ways. And we were apart for just over 2 years. I had another relationship. He decided to stay single and work on himself, and we had no contact for that entire time. We lived two roads away from each other, didn't see each other the entire time, and it just so happened that we were both single and bumped into each other at the bottom of my road, and kind of those sparks were still there. So it started as a friendship and just getting to know each other again. And we had both done a lot of work on ourselves as individuals. And we thought, you know what, that love is still there and we'll give it a go. And we were really happy. We were. It was, you know, the little niggles of, oh, you've left the toilet seat up, and you've left your pants on the floor, you know, just silly things. But we were, what I thought, we were genuinely very, very happy. So a couple of years in, we got engaged. We both liked to do adventure-style holidays, and we were trekking to Annapurna base camp in Nepal, and we got to the base camp and he proposed and we were overlooking a glacier and it was absolutely beautiful and it was magical, and I was on cloud nine. And we got back and started planning our wedding, and little cracks started to appear. He was very anxious about being up in front of people, but he decided that's what he wanted his friends and his family there, so we carried on planning. And a year after getting engaged, he went on his stag do. And he is very much, he's quite like me. I'm a people pleaser, and he's also a people pleaser. Mm. Don't like letting people down. And his friends wanted to recreate a holiday they'd all been on as 18-year-olds. Mm. And to go away and go to Tenerife and have a party. That's not what he wanted to do, but he didn't want to tell them that. Mm-hmm. So they went to Tenerife, and they all knew about his struggles with his addiction and that he was clean, and they assured me that he would be safe and looked after. And even though he wasn't himself when he came back, he assured me everything was fine. It's just wedding anxiety. We were 2 months away from the wedding. Once it's over, he would be back to normal. And so we persevered, we pushed through, and I believed him. And it only transpired 3 months after the wedding that he'd relapsed on that holiday with his friends. Mm. And he'd carried on using once he was home. Mm. And they thought that he could just pick it up and put it down and everything would be fine. Yeah. He'd been clean for very long and it wouldn't be a problem. And they didn't realise that actually he had continued to struggle as he'd kept that to himself. Mm. And he'd kept it from everyone, and he had really kind of started to live a double life.
Yeah.
And it did take over. He sold his flat so that we could buy a place together. I own a property with my sister. This is where we bought after our mum died. And so the idea was that we would sell this and he would sell his flat. We'd get our first home and have a family. Yeah. And unfortunately, he spent all of the money, a lot of money, over an 18-month period. And it took a while for him to tell me that that's what he'd done. And 11 months into our marriage, we separated because of it. And we kept in contact and were trying to work through it. And after 4 months, he did come back to the house, and we did try and make a go of things again. But within a few months, it was quite clear that he was still really struggling. And he wanted to do things by himself. He didn't want to accept that he needed someone's help, but he knew that he needed to have other help, professional help, but he wanted to ask for it by himself. I offered to go to NA or Narcotics Anonymous groups with him. Mm-hmm. To take him there physically, to go to meetings that I would be allowed to be a part of, to take him and I'd sit in the car outside, to go to a therapist, to go to a couples therapist. He just did not want to do those things. He was not ready. And he kept spiraling. He had a couple of mental breakdowns. And then he appeared to kind of be picking himself back up. And throughout this whole process, from the stag do really onwards, he'd been in and out of work, which was also affecting his mental health and his financial condition. And it kind of all of came to a head January of last year. He'd conned me out of money. He wasn't working. He wasn't taking care of himself. We were living completely separate lives. He would be up all night using drugs. I would be working, paying the bills by myself, struggling through, and I'd come home and be upstairs. So it became a very toxic and unhealthy environment for both of us, not just me, it was both of us.
Yeah.
And so I just had to kind of rip the plaster off and say, neither of us are happy as individuals or as a couple, and I think it's best if we separate.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to come to terms with that because I carried a lot of embarrassment and a lot of shame about the fact that my marriage had failed.
Yeah.
And a lot of people had said to me, oh, you know, people can't change. He won't change. And I think the stubborn part of me was like, I'll prove you wrong.
Yeah. And more the part of, even the stubborn part, Katie, the part of you love this person. Oh, and you love them with your whole being, and you know, whatever vows you took on your wedding, it's sickness and health, better for worse. It's you don't, you know, I feel like some people's values are different and kind of will easier throw in the towel and kind of won't stand for, like, we all have different thresholds. And it's so hard when you're up against, like, listening to you and you know, hearing you now, the words out your own mouth, a story of, you know, I think before when I read your letter, I thought, poor, she took on a lot. And I wonder if I would do the same. And it's just so different when you, I don't know, hearing now, listening, I'd be like, I'd do the same. I would do the same. I'd go to the end of the earth and just exhaust every resource so I can go, I tried. I really tried.
I think if anyone else was sat in front of me asking for advice in the same situation, I'd be like, are you crazy? Don't you value yourself enough? You know, but having been through it, it's totally different. And like you say, that love is so all encompassing. And I could see who he was before. I knew who he was before. And accepting that person was gone was devastating. That person doesn't exist. That person I loved so much, that was affectionate, that made me laugh, that did little things for me. Like, you know, it would be really cold, so we'd go and defrost the car so I wouldn't have to do it before work. You know, who'd run me a bath because I had a stressful day. Just those little thoughtful things, that person was gone.
Yeah.
And that was really, really hard because he's not a horrible person. He's not a bad person. He has such a huge amount of potential. And he's just an unwell person. And that's the sad thing about it. And I think part of the hold, which kind of relates back to my previous loss, my mum knew him. My mum loved him.
I was just about to ask, do you think there's a reason why you held on for so long? Because he was part of history for you that is now lost. I would echo absolutely the same, yeah.
Yeah, my mum knew him, and while she fully accepted him as an individual, and she knew that he had issues that he had to deal with, but she loved him and she could see him for who he is. And for me, knowing that my mum's not here, but she'd met my husband and, you know, the person that I thought would be the father of my children.
Yeah.
It's almost another kind of loss of a connection to my mum.
It's a touchstone to memory, like you're losing someone who also has memories of her too. And so then consciously deciding to, like, eradicate that of your life, you're then losing another piece of mum. And it may not feel like that in the immediate time, but you realize, you look and you look back and you go, like, wow, that's another deeper part of this, that potentially people externally who are just saying, leave him, like, look what he's doing to you. Do you not value yourself, blah blah blah. It's like, it's so much more deeper ingrained than that.
It is a shame because, like I say, he, when he's sober, gosh, his energy is amazing, and he's so funny and witty. He's got great banter. He's kind of the life and soul of the party. And he just makes everyone around him happy. And unfortunately, that's not the side of him that I've seen in a number of years.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Being both bereaved by a death and with this, like, I want to know, and I want to ask Katie of, like, in those, the immediacy kind of, like, after you decided to end your marriage, did you notice, and now upon reflection, like, looking back, did you notice any similarities in how when after your mum died to when you split up with your husband, to kind of, like, that grieving, you know, them raw days and weeks after, yeah. Like, did it feel familiar?
In a horrible way, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think the biggest difference, I think, is my mum, while she was terminally ill, died very suddenly. And I had not accepted the fact that she was going to die, 23. Mm. And, you know, I know the world, she's going to be fine. She's going to be here forever. What are you talking about? Whereas in my mind, I think I had kind of accepted my marriage was over a few months before I actually verbalized that it was over.
Yeah.
But the action of saying it and putting it out there into reality, it destroyed me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as well, having to be the person to make the decision rather than my mum dying kind of happened to me.
Yeah.
That wasn't a choice I made. Whereas this was, while it was a decision I made, wasn't any less painful.
Yeah.
And yeah, the crying, the staying in bed, the breaking down for no reason, and then that kind of euphoric high of I'm gonna be fine, life's great, yeah. I'm still mm-hmm. here, that pendulum of emotions, absolutely, those few months afterwards, and even the have I done the right thing, no, I need to take him back,
yeah,
he can't survive without me, I can't survive mm-hmm. without him, what am I doing, this is crazy, no, I'm fine, I deserve better, but do I deserve better, am I an awful human being for walking away from somebody that needs help? I took very, very seriously. And I think if we had been a boyfriend and girlfriend just cohabiting together, I think it would have been different in that I might have walked away a little bit sooner.
I can understand that totally.
I took my marriage vows seriously. And I think another part of it, my mum is buried in a burial park that has a beautiful ceremonial hall. That's where I had my wedding. And we actually had a blessing at her graveside, just the two of us, and a celebrant after the ceremony. Yeah. And so it's also having to have that connection every time mm-hmm. I go and visit my mum. Oh, I got married here. And even the staff there to this day don't know that we're not together. And I go there, oh, she had the most beautiful wedding here. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's another little to the wound. Yep, thanks for that, guys. Yep.
I don't mean it in a horrible way.
Of course not. Yeah.
I don't, but just to have to be like, it was a beautiful day. It was a wonderful day. But it's gone.
Yeah. Obviously, look back and to go, like, there were beautiful parts of this. And I found it so interesting of you saying of how, like, this is a new layer and, like, an additional grief to what you've already experienced. And as you kind of said, like, it's like voluntary, but in a way it's not voluntary. It's like your arm was twisted behind your back. You've been put into a situation that I think actually, whether, you know, if you were to have stayed, you would have been grieving still. You would still be grieving for the partner that you wanted him to be and for the life that you wanted to have together. So either way, you would have just always kind of been in a state of grieving and having to live by and witness somebody that you love so dearly kind of just change before your eyes every single day. And just that uncertainty of you just don't know of how how far is it going to go this time? And, you know, the potentially the final straw of being conned by him for money. And so in, at that point, Katie, was that for my next question, kind of, you know, when and how did you know when I need to walk away for the better of not only for yourself, but for him as well? And kind of, what were the kind of conversations you were having with yourself and with him, if applicable, to actually go, this will be best for both of us?
Yeah. So October 21 was when I found out about the money. Mm. In the February, we needed work done on our garage, and his best friend's dad was able to do the work. That's mm-hmm. what he does. And so I gave him cash to give to him as a deposit. And he said to me, yeah, I'm waiting for him to come and do it. He's doing it on a good price for us, so I need to wait until he's free. And this went all the way through into the summer of me asking almost weekly, well, when's he coming? He's got my money. When's he coming to do the job? And in my gut, I said to him, this doesn't feel right. I feel like you're not being honest. Just be honest. If you've taken the money and you're going to be honest with me about it, that's fine. We can work through it. No. I promise you, he's got the money. So I rang him myself and asked him. He didn't have the money. He'd never been given the money. He was waiting to be called to be booked in. So I just went home and I just said, we need to have a chat. I know you didn't give him the money. Where is it? Oh, I had to pay a debt. Okay. The trust is gone. Yeah. And for me, out of everything that had happened previously, I felt that there was this unwritten rule that we had each other's backs and I'm keeping a roof over our heads and I'm taking care of him as best I can. He would never do that to me. Mm-hmm. And then he did it to me. And I just thought, I can't do this. And so I said to him at that point, you are the only person that can fix this. I can't put any more effort into fixing this relationship. Mm-hmm. Emotionally, I'm spent. I need you to step up now and either you fix this marriage or we have no future. And that was October time. And so he just became more distant from that day onwards. He refused to share a bed with me, not through me kicking him out, but just his own shame, I think. Yeah. He would stay up all night, fall asleep on the sofa. And then as his behaviour spiralled, I found myself, I would wake up early every morning to see if he was either, I could hear him snoring downstairs, or if he'd made it to the spare bedroom, was asleep in there, or if he was moving around, because I had got to the point where I was terrified I was going to wake up and find him dead.
Yeah.
And that is not normal.
No,
it's not normal to live that way, to lie in bed thinking, well, oh, he's snoring. Okay, he's alive today. Okay, I can get up and get on with my day. And not really saying anything to each other, but living in a house. And then that Christmas I got COVID and I was really ill. I couldn't get out of bed for 5 days. And he took care of me. He did. He stepped up. He got me medicine. And he did take care of me. And I thought, oh, my gosh, there's a glimpse. Maybe there's a glimpse. But actually, I was bedridden, so he was able to do what he wanted without me kind of casting any judgment or knowing what he was doing because I couldn't get out of bed. And with my job, I had annual leave booked over Christmas and New Year that I then had to give up because I'd been off sick and I needed the money. I had to go back to work, which meant I missed my stepmom's 60th birthday, a surprise birthday. I couldn't be a part of it because I was at work. My dad's 61st birthday, and he's only been back in my life 3 years. So that was quite an important event for us to share together. And he wasn't phased that I'd missed those really important family moments. And that was kind of it for me. In my mind, I just thought there's no coming back. He doesn't care.
Yeah.
And how do you make someone care about you? You can't.
Care about you.
That's not possible. And if he doesn't care about you, which is just a basic human emotion, then he definitely doesn't love you.
Mm.
And it doesn't matter how much I love him. If he doesn't love himself, I know it's that cliche of you have to love yourself to love other people. And I don't always believe in that. But he doesn't love himself, which is why he uses drugs. And it's why he feels that he's not worthy of love. He doesn't accept other people's love. And so it doesn't matter what I do or don't do. This isn't about me. And so, yeah, it was in that January, and I'd had enough of crying. I'd had enough. I want a family. That's something, ever since I was little, all I've wanted is my own family and just some stability, because I haven't had it.
Yeah.
And I just thought, am I going to sacacrifice all of that for this person? No, I'm not. I want a family, and I can't have a family with this person. It's not safe to introduce a child to this environment. I can't guarantee he's going to lose his job while I'm on maternity leave, and then how do we pay the bills? How can I guarantee that a child is going to have him present in their life? I can't.
No.
And that was the final thing for me of, I'm getting older and I need to, you know, do something before it's too late. And so that's what I had to do.
Did it feel a bit like, Katie, like hearing you then kind of just how the shift and spending time listening to your story of how for so long it sounds like, you know, you didn't think of that future you. You didn't think of that future of the family that you want and that future child of, would this be safe? Would I be safe? Would it just be, did it almost feel like an awakening of just like someone has finally like just pulled off and just gone, you know, you deserve better now. And then how, and also as well to that question of like, what were the kind of, and how did you handle and get through the thoughts of like, okay, well, if I leave him, what does that mean for him? Like, how did, because as you said earlier, like those thoughts were prominent of he needs me and I need him, but like he needs me, and kind of actually having to go of, I actually have to put that down because that will be what will keep you staying. How did you work through that?
He has a great family network. And while he's not incredibly close with his family in the sense emotionally, they talk daily or every other day. His parents are still here and they only live a couple of roads away from me. And they're wonderful people. He has two older sisters who have their own families. And I knew that his parents would take him in. Whether they wanted to was a different thing, but I knew that they would. That's their baby boy, and they would take him in and look after him. So I knew that he wouldn't be on the streets. I knew he wouldn't be in danger, and he had somewhere to go. And I knew that I'd done everything I could. I had done everything that I could. I had nothing else to try. And part of me was hoping that saying it's over and him going back to his parents might actually snap him out of it, might be the thing that makes him say, yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm going to sort myself out because I'm going to get my life back. Unfortunately, that's not been the case. And I just want him to be happy. You know, whether we're together, whether we're apart, we both deserve to be happy. And I think for me, just knowing that I had tried everything possible and the outcome was not going to be any different, I think that was the thing that made me kind of the light bulb moment where I thought, my future's going to be gone. What happens if I'm still here in 10 years' time in my 40s and I'm not able to have a family, I've got no money, I've not had the life that I want to have because of this person? And I'd got to the point where I was always looking over my shoulder. He owes money to not nice people. And I don't know who these people are, but you could Google my name and see where I work. I'm a veterinary nurse. I work with some controlled drugs. If they wanted to turn up at my work and make things difficult for me, they could if they wanted to. I don't think they would, but desperate people do desperate things. And I did not want that to impact my career that I've worked really hard for. And I didn't want to live my life looking over my shoulder all the time. Yeah. And even after he left, I spent the next 6 months terrified that bailiffs were going to come through my front door because letters were turning up here, debt letters were turning up. And it got to the point I spent 6 weeks last summer not sleeping because I was scared they were going to come through my window at night. And it took me calling a friend who happens to work in that industry to kind of reassure me that now I'm safe. It's not going to happen. If there's any problems, I can call him. But I don't want to live my life in fear. No. My mum isn't here to live her life, and I'm still here. and I have the opportunity to get up and make every day as good as I can. And I want to do that. Not, you know, not just for her, but for me. You know, there are so many things I want to do still. And unfortunately, I can't do that with him in my life, which is a shame. Yeah.
It's a shame. And it's the, it's like, I feel, and this feels really like apt as well for like grief. Of, and I've been thinking and talking about this a lot of like, you know, you don't ever in grief and whatever you're going through have to find, I think we're so conditioned in like society and toxic positivity to like find the silver lining in everything. And like, this is all happening for a reason and blah, 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 blah. And it can be applicable where necessary and some places not. And it's like, I feel like, you know, we as bereaved children and everyone going through like a living loss, like we will never be okay with like what has happened to us and the people that we love. But we can be okay with like accepting, like, and I know it's kind of hard to like say of like, I'm not cool with, or we're not okay with what's happening, but I can accept kind of what has happened. And that's really hard. And that's not for everybody. People can never accept, you know, the death of their loved one and stuff. And like, I feel like I can accept the death of my mum, and kind of hearing you speak, Kate, of like kind of you can accept of what has happened to you and the shame, the shame of it all, of like, this is such a shame that this has happened and we've come to this, but I can accept of why this has happened. And how freeing that can be, and just like really freeing of you. I know it is so painful, and I can imagine it's still painful today. And even, you know, I'm so grateful to sit here today and talk to you about it. And I can imagine how much it can be quite painful to reflect on and go back to, especially something that's so recent and still a living loss. If that's the part with a living loss, is that although it's very much that's a chapter that is parked and bookended of your life, I can imagine potentially, I'm trying to imagine if I was in a situation, is there always like a question of like, what if?
Oh, like, yeah.
Because yeah. Because they are still alive and kind of you're grieving for it, but always, but yeah. What if he really stayed clean and he got himself together and he came back? What if?
Yeah. I couldn't do it. I'm at that point now where I couldn't, because I've seen, I couldn't trust him. I wouldn't be able to trust him.
Yeah.
And I think you don't have a foundation for any friendship, relationship, whatever it is, if you don't have trust. And do you know, it's been an interesting year because we separated in January, and I didn't file for divorce until November, just because I was getting my life back on track, sorting myself out, maybe a bit selfishly, but I just wanted the dust to settle. And then having to tell him that, okay, I'm doing this, I'm filing, was another loss. He did not take it well. He did not take it well at all. Not that I expected him to, but I didn't think that he would be so surprised by it, being that it had been.
Do you think there was a part, like, as where you said, you thought when you finally said, I'm walking, sorry to interrupt you there. Mm-hmm. This is like how I was when I was like reading your letter and like going through, I was like, these are the questions that I have. do you think there was a part of like, you know, when you said, when you left, or kind of, it's almost like, you know, when I'm imagining that, of like when you're having an argument, you're walking away and you just want them to chase after you and they don't. And then, so he's not chased you. And then when you filed for divorce, and then he's kind of had a flare up and gone, what? He's thinking, oh, well, I thought she was going to come back. I thought she was going to have a bit of a breather. You were both kind of looking the other way, but always kind of looking back of like, who's going to budge? And you went, no, like, I'm done. And he was like, fuck.
That was a big pattern in our relationship. We would have an argument. He would ignore me for however many days until I would have to break that barrier. And it was always me coming back because I was like, life's too short to be miserable. But it was a big pattern in our relationship that we would just naturally come back to each other. And I think he thought, yeah, she'll come back eventually. But even so, that day that we had the conversation, I'd been out with my dad during the day and I just sat through lunch and cried and cried and cried, gone for a coffee, cried and cried. And I just thought, I've got to do it. What am I waiting for? I have to do it. And I just came home 6 o'clock in the evening and I just said to him, we're not happy. And he said, what are you saying? I said, I think we need to call it a day. And he said, okay, well, I need to find somewhere to live. I was like, okay, well, would your parents take you in? Well, I don't know, you know, me and my dad don't get along sometimes when we live together, but I'll call them. Okay.
Mm.
That was it. That was the extent of the conversation. My marriage was done.
Fight, yeah.
We didn't fight. There was no, but Katie, I love you, but we're meant to spend our lives together, but we're meant to have a family. There was nothing. Yeah. And I was hysterical, went up to my room, called my sister who came over and stayed with me the night. And he ordered a takeaway. Just carried on as if everything was perfectly normal. And less than 24 hours later, he was gone. I took the dog for a walk with my sister, came back and he was packing up his bags and he was gone. Mm. And so for me, I had accepted he doesn't want to be with me. And I don't know if, I think a part of him loves me or loved me, but I don't know if it was just easy to be with me because I had my own place and I would let him kind of come and go as he pleased. He was quite free to be whoever he wanted to be.
Mm.
And so I don't know if he was just kind of in that routine. But when I did say to him, I'm filing for divorce, there was no pleasure in that. It was horrible of having to kind of go through it all over again, open up that wound. And he still had some things at my house, which I had to ask him to take, which he wasn't happy about. And he said some not very nice things and called me some not very nice things. And I know it was out of hurt. And he did apologize the next day for that. But part of me, again, was kind of hoping maybe this will snap him out of it. Not for our relationship, but for himself. And I don't know. We're not in regular enough contact for me to know if that's been the case. But I hope that there has been, out of all of this, that maybe he has thought, you know what, I deserve a family. I deserve to be happy and I need to put the work in to get there. But something you touched on earlier, actually, was kind of that acceptance. Mm. For the first month or so, I was in that raw grief, not eating, not sleeping, crying all the time. And I was at work and one of the guys said to me, oh, you look awful. Are you ill? I said, no. I've just been crying and not sleeping because, you know, my marriage has ended. And he said, oh, right, okay.
So eloquent.
I was like, okay. And he said, do you want to talk about it? So I told him very briefly, you know, that addiction had played a part. And he said to me, you know, this has got nothing to do with you. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm his wife. Yeah, it's got nothing to do with you. He said, addiction is more powerful than love, more powerful than anything else in the world. This has nothing to do with you. This is not personal to you. This is him and his journey and his story. And this person shared with me an experience they had had with addiction and turning their life around. And he said, look, it's been a long time for me and I've changed and put things in place that keep me safe. But it doesn't matter what someone says to you or what someone threatens you with. He said, you've threatened him however many times, but you were still there.
Yeah.
He took the drugs and you were still there. So it didn't matter what you were going to say. He has to want those things and he has to want to change this. It doesn't matter if it's you, if it's his mum, if it's somebody else, it's not a personal thing against you. And that for me was so freeing. I hadn't done anything wrong. I wasn't the problem. The problem was that he needs professional help to deal with what he's going through. And actually I'm not a professional. And whether I did something or I didn't do something, the consequences were going to be the same and the outcome would likely have been very similar. And actually, I think that for his friends, they should feel quite responsible for putting him in the position that they did that weekend, because that was the start of it all for him.
I was going to say, yeah, like how towards, and again, kind of, although it's like, you know, it's his own decisions, but, you know, the environment that you're in and kind of knowing that this is just not good for your friend and playing a huge part in the catalyst of like ruining his life and then his marriage, and though, you know, accountability is due where it's due.
Yeah. And I struggle with it, but it's not my place to step in or intervene or get involved. But since this has happened in his life, a few of those friends have walked away because they don't feel that he's a positive influence around their children, or that he's maybe safe for their children to be around. And I think, well, you're all hypocrites, because you are more than happy to take him away and put him in that position. You couldn't say no to a party. You know, he wanted to go fishing, actually. He wanted quite a chilled stag do. And you all wanted to have the party because he was one of the last ones in the group to get married. And you couldn't turn that down for what he wanted. You all wanted that. And you promised me to take care of him, and you couldn't do it for a weekend.
Yeah, for 2 days, and look at the consequence of it all, and kind of, now they have the cheat to turn their back on him and to do, that's hard. And just, I can imagine, the additional hurt there of looking at these people who are, I guess, you know, friends between the pair of you for a very long time, and the additional grief of that. But to round up, Katie, I want to ask you, and it's kind of a question I ask people, I asked back in like the very early days of the podcast, and I realised I never really done it much, and I might start bringing it back in this season, of kind of asking about your younger self, and kind of, if you could go back to, you know, younger Katie, who's kind of, I don't want to say when you just met him, because I wonder, I suppose first question for this, if you could go back to younger Katie and like stand in front of her, like in the street, and be like, don't talk to that boy, don't get with him, and here's why, would you?
18-year-old Katie thought she knew everything.
As we all did.
Yeah. And even if I was stood in front of me, I know myself well enough to know that I'd be like, I don't believe you. I can change him. What are you talking about?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's not going to happen. Mm. I don't see the point on looking back on things and saying, what if, oh, but.
Yeah.
I think when we got back together, even then I didn't listen to other people. Because I believe that he'd changed. So I think there's no point in regretting decisions. Yeah. Can we change things? I guess we can change a decision and say, look, I've opted into this and now I'm opting out, but this has made me who I am. This is just another chapter in my story, really. And I can put my hand on my heart and go to bed at night knowing I've tried everything. I've exhausted this. This unfortunately isn't going to work for the two of us. And when we initially separated after those 7.5 years, I would at night wonder, but what if he changes? But what if he does this? You know, you sometimes check social media to see what they're up to. I don't need to do that anymore because I know I've done everything I can and I can put it to bed. But as far as my younger self goes, I would say it'll be a bumpy ride. But that doesn't mean it's a bad one, because we've had some amazing experiences together. We've been to incredible places in the world. We've done some wonderful things together, and we loved each other. And some people go through an entire lifetime never knowing what that is. And I got it.
Yeah.
You know? Okay, I don't have that now, but I had it. And I was really lucky. I had a beautiful wedding day. I had all the people I love in one room. And a marriage is not about that one day. That's not what I'm saying. But I got to experience all of my loved ones together in one place for me and him. And to feel that love was beautiful. And I find it's really only kind of weddings and funerals that you kind of get those vibes, unfortunately. And sometimes, you know, big milestone birthday parties, but you don't really get many of those nowadays. So to have that experience of just feeling that love, I've been through a lot, and I felt like after losing my mum, I kind of had small living losses in that I lost a lot of my friends because they didn't know what to do. So to look around that room and see all those people that had stood by me and had seen me through and literally picked me up off the floor, who were still there and were championing me, That was amazing. And they're still in my life and they're still championing me and they still want me to be happy and they still look out for me. And I still am so grateful for the people in my life. And a lot of people can't say that.
Exactly.
I don't take that for granted. I really don't.
I love that. So it would be a bumpy ride, but love will be there.
All the way. Roller coasters are fun.
Exactly.
Fun at the end of it.
Throw your hands up and just see what happens.
Try not to be sick on the way around.
Oh, well, Katie, thank you so much for joining me today on the Grief Gang podcast. I know that this episode will absolutely help so many people who have lived or are living sort of situations like yourself. So thank you for becoming and being so vulnerable and open and just a beautiful human being.
My pleasure. Can I just say, if anyone is going through what I have been through, my advice to them would be to seek support for yourself. I think that's one of the things I didn't do. It wasn't until my marriage ended that I was honest with people and told them what was going on. So I spent 3 years struggling through. And there are support groups available via Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, for people who are carers or in relationships with people who themselves are struggling. So please utilise those support services, because I didn't, and I really, really should have. Not that it would have changed the consequences or made me leave earlier or made me stay longer, but would have been better for my mental health in the long run. And I think that's looking after yourself is always paramount.
Thanks for tuning in this week. I truly appreciate every single person who listens to the show. By doing so, you're actually helping more people find the show and in turn support themselves. You can keep up to date and become part of the Grief Gang community by following us on social media platforms such as Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok. Check out our website and blog too, and if you fancy, you can sign up to our newsletter, where you will receive regular emails and first to knows on events and workshops. All links for the above are in the episode footnotes. Big love, look after yourself, and I...
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We'll see you next week.